Hi, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Lannan for Set for Success, where we help you create a roadmap to transform your business, career, or life, or maybe give you another perspective. There are many perspectives on business. Have you ever had a dream about owning your own business? I have spent my life working with business leaders and professionals and making their business better. I've even owned several businesses throughout my career, and still, I own a company called Brave World. We deal with business leaders. We do training development, a whole bunch of stuff. But that's not irrelevant right now. So you know I am dedicated to entrepreneurs, the professional, the business leaders who is willing to step up and step out of their comfort zone to make their dream happen, to create their own reality. And I think that's really what entrepreneurs do. I also find it fascinating the people that help them do it. And I know there's tons of business leaders and professionals and friends and family in our economy that do that too. Every now and then I come across a unique person, someone who went away, had a great job, left that job, moved back to their home, basically did the unthinkable, start a business in a small space that they are passionate about. Does that sound familiar? Do you know anybody's done that? I think I know a few people. They're connected with people, created relationships, built trust, and then started the process of creating something from nothing. Maybe a small service company, a garage, a cafe, a health and fitness store. I've had a few people on like that, or some other business. Sometimes that business came from necessity. They lost their job, so they had to do something, and they sat back and thought about it and went, I don't want to work for anybody else. I'm going to work for myself. And so they stepped up again and stepped out and started to make it happen. Maybe they were tired of the grind and the things that happened, right? So they resigned from the man to go working for themselves. In all the glory, they started the process of taking the risk, finding help, and making it happen. Well, my next guest did that. That's what I think anyway. And the man, do I ever want to chat with this guy? I am totally interested in what he's doing. If anything, just to hear about his journey. He is Kevin, the entrepreneur extraordinary of a company called Little Brown Jug. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Richard. So glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. My opening is a little bit strange this time because I'm sort of going to the side of people sort of stepping out there and starting their business and making things happen. But I started reading up a little bit on you online, which I do that to everybody. So just so you know, right? But, mm-hmm. You know, I need to have a little bit of research happening. And I started looking at your career. So why don't we start there? Let's back up, you know, Kevin, because I know you were from Winnipeg, Manitoba, but then you went away for a while and had this whole other career before returning and starting your own business. Let's go way back. What were you doing before you became entrepreneur extraordinaire?
Thanks. I grew up in Winnipeg, and then I went away to university and ended up in Ottawa working as an economist for the federal government. There I did. I got a lot of very interesting files throughout. It was actually very rewarding work.
I'm glad you said that, actually, because I was wondering, did you enjoy that work or not?
Yeah, I got to work on trade policy files, negotiations at the World Trade Organization in Geneva, and then all kinds of front page microeconomic issues for almost 10 years. But around the last few years that I was there, I could see my career path laid out in front of me in the government. And I kind of thought, you know, is this all I want to do, or do I want to do something else? Because right now would be the time to do it. And so I started thinking about different business possibilities, and a lot of them I discarded. Like, I'd go down the sort of analytical path and then be like, okay, this isn't going to work for certain reasons. And I did have a desire to come back to Winnipeg and do something here. There was something about, there's an energy and a new excitement in the city, and I wanted to be able to be a part of that. And I think, as you know, a lot of people end up coming home anyway, right?
I know. You know, it's really, Winnipeg is one of those interesting cities where people go away, but then they come back. It's like, you know, this big elastic band stays connected to them, and eventually they bounce back here or something. And even I did the same thing. My wife and I came back here 6 years ago for family reasons. And so I totally got it when I started reading up on you. And I didn't know this until I actually read your background a little bit, that you had gone away and came back. You went, oh, I get this guy. That's sort of my first thought. It sounds like quite an interesting experience. I want to just talk about your analytics side a little bit first before we actually talk about what you're doing now, because you said you looked at other businesses. And of course, Little Brown Jug is your present business, but what were some of the other businesses that you looked at? What were you thinking about?
Like for a while, I was really fascinated in like high-end grocery stores, kind of like sort of just well-organized, well-appointed grocery stores. But you know, even going down that line, I'd think about like, you know, there's other players in that market that could quickly undercut you.
Yeah,
if they have the supply chains and other resources to kind of do that, right? The thing that's kind of interesting about beer, I guess, is like.
Because that's what you do.
That's what I do. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You manufacture beer. Or yeah, if that's what you want to say. I got to go with my last show. They call it manufacturing. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, on the beer, well, having a microbrewery is interesting because you have a branded product, a final product that goes to the consumer, but you're also making that product. So you actually have all like the supply chains and manufacturing components about setting up basically a plant that can run efficiently as well. So it's kind of interesting to be in both of those sides of the equation.
Yeah, yeah. I went with the Atlantic side first in our questioning because often I like to share my own story. And I think maybe we go back to just interests and we come in that side because you are a new entrepreneur, really, from a starting point, right? But just sort of discovering what it is you want to do and the thoughts and just your own personal interests, you know, so we've already unveiled that you have a microbrewery in beer. Why beer?
I guess I was living in Ottawa at the time and there's a really strong craft beer scene in Ontario and in Quebec. And I was going down to Vermont a lot and just sort of like exploring the microbrewery scene and, I really like the social aspects of craft beer. I think it's kind of, you know, like the idea that you go out and have a, you know, different flavorful beer and there's that kind of aspect of it. And then, yeah, I just visit enough microbreweries, I guess, that you see, you're like, okay, maybe I can.
Maybe I can have one of these one day.
Yeah.
I've got some friends that did the same thing with wine and they just visited enough wine places that eventually they ended up in the wine business. And I think that was sort of the same idea too.
Yeah, I just asked the right questions and I got involved with the Ontario Craft Brewers and it kind of went from there. I started writing a business plan. Like you mentioned that I'm a sort of a new entrepreneur and I definitely came at this from an analytical perspective. I'm not the kind of this is a big enterprise in some ways, right? For a new entrepreneur, I didn't come at it like I'm going to take this crazy risk. I'm going to quit my job and move back to Winnipeg all, you know, in one punch. It was very incremental, like writing the business plan, gathering the information, talking to the right people. I mean, I grew up in a household. My mother was a nurse. My father was an RCMP officer. And so there was nothing that engendered sort of entrepreneurial risk-taking in me as a child. So it's very much, I think, learned from my economics background.
From your stepdad and from the experience you had. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, that's where we're going to start off from. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I am hanging out with the owner of Little Brown Jug. And it is a microbrewery here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, sort of in a cool area. Where's it located?
Oh, we're right down in the Exchange across from Red River College on William Avenue.
On William Avenue. I know we'll talk a bit more about that, but since I brought up the name and everything, Kevin, I figured we should probably touch that right now. Just before the break, we were talking about your background in terms of entrepreneurship, because I'm going to sort of use the term, you're the unlikely entrepreneur. Because of your family experience. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
I mean, nothing could be less entrepreneurial maybe than my career in government, right?
Yeah,
most
people
would say.
Yeah, that sort of surprised me a bit when I was reading up on your career. So in what way? Did it prepare you for what you're doing now or maybe not?
I mean, in some ways it did because in the government, we studied business. We studied small businesses and we met with business leaders of some very, at Industry Canada where I was working, some very large businesses would come in and talk to us about, you know, strategy and what they were doing. So from an analytical perspective, it was useful, but, you know, it still doesn't engender that entrepreneurial spirit. So I don't know where that came from, except that I studied it maybe.
And that you say, you learned it and basically became part of you as you actually learned a bit more about being an entrepreneur.
I mean, maybe in the end, it's really, for me, I'm a project-based person, even in the government. My entire life, I've taken on projects, house renovations, different things like that. And so maybe for me, this was just a project that I had to break down into the different components. And I don't think people, like, obviously we're a business, we have financial goals, but like, this is also like, there's a big vision about what we want to do down there with Little Brown Jug in the Exchange. And that's really maybe the part that's the most exciting for me.
Okay. So now I understand you a little bit more. Now that I understand that you're analytical and you got sort of a project management background, and most project managers, they, I think you gravitate to certain things, right? And so they like the beginning, middle, and end of things, right? And then it's next, mm-hmm. right? And analytic people tend to like the details and everything, making sure that the I's are dotted and T's are crossed, and making sure that it makes sense. So it sounds to me like you got that combination of that. Versus an operational type person. These are all very different types of characters. I know, I've been around a long time. Yeah. You're allowing me to analyze you on the show. I had the opportunity to meet with you last night, just briefly, and you told me about the Exchange District where you're located in, and the finding of your place. So let's just sort of step back a little bit into that. So you decided to come back to Winnipeg and open a microbrewery, and I'm sure there was a whole decision process on that, and you thought it through. What was it like sort of getting something off the ground? Where did you start with in terms of some of the things you started doing to get your company off the ground?
I mean, I guess after I had my business plan, I started pitching it for investors. And, you know, when I went to my investors, I didn't have a building, a brewmaster, a brand, or a beer.
So basically everything that you needed, you didn't have.
Essentially. And so not long after, you know, having some people sign on to the project, I was looking for the building because that was really important. Location was very important, obviously being in Winnipeg, but not just being in Winnipeg, being in the Exchange District or being downtown. In other places, these breweries have had a very positive impact on the urban landscape, and that was really a big part of what we wanted to do.
Okay. So what was the process of finding your building?
I was still living in Ottawa, so I was flying back to Winnipeg, and I was walking up and down the streets of the Exchange and the downtown, kind of making notes of like what's going on in these buildings, because some of them you don't know, right?
It just looks, I know. Like, some of them look like, say it. dilapidated.
Like, yeah, they look dilapidated, or they have like boxes piled up in them, right? And it's like, did somebody just move out of their parents' basement or stacks? Is it just being used for storage, right?
Yeah,
so some of these, you don't know, right? So you kind of do Google searches and you look around. And I was looking at a few buildings, and then I came back to see the building that we're in, and I hadn't met my agent, my broker, or the other sides, and I was parked in the parking lot and walked out in front of the building, and I ran into the landlord, but I didn't know he was the landlord at the time, and we were just talking about the building, and I was kind of like, he was like, "Oh yeah, there's a microbrewery interested in this space." I was like, "Wait, I am the microbrewery," and I just kind of talked to him about like the vision of what the space could become and what it would look for. And I think throughout the process of like kind of negotiating the lease and then collaborating on the build out of the space, we kind of often would come back to that moment where we kind of shared that vision for that space.
That vision. Now, I actually don't mind mentioning the landlord on air, if that's okay. I mean,
yeah, sure.
Canadian Footwear, Brian, I think basically owns that building, and he's a great business guy, business leader in our economy, and he's done a lot for businesses within the Exchange District and within Winnipeg, Manitoba. So thanks, Brian.
Yeah, no, he's been fantastic. And I think for him, having his business next door, he cares a lot about the city and the Exchange, but cared very much about what was going to go in next to him as well.
Yeah, and he cares about that area. I mean,
yes.
I know he very much cares. I've had the opportunity to chat with him many times. So to mention that on here, I think we should celebrate those kind of things and within our economy and people too. Basically, okay, so you got this building, right? And all boarded up and looking dilapidated. I like the word dilapidated. that you had to do work on and that. So that's great. It sounds to me like you got your building, but then you also said you didn't have, investors, the building, a brewmaster or a beer. So what was it about getting a brewmaster? Like what was that like?
Yeah, it was really serendipitous in some ways. Before I moved back, I had connected with somebody who's actually a brewer now at Little Brown Jug, and he connected me when I was looking to come back. I was talking to a few possibilities, and he connected me to this brewmaster who's probably like the most qualified, I'd say, in the city. He's brewed in Germany. He has a master's from UC Davis. He was the founding brewmaster at Lake of the Woods. He's brewed at Half Pints and Fort Garry earlier on in his career, so very fortunate to have him. But more importantly, I think... we're a good match. We're doing we're a good match. We're doing production brewing first and foremost. So at Little Brown Jug, we just make one beer right now. It's a Belgian pale ale called 1919. And he is first and foremost a production brewer. So this is the kind of stuff he wants to be doing.
So I know nothing about brewing other than, you know, you put stuff in, you take it out, you do it the right time, tastes good, you have a good time. So what is a production brewer?
I guess like we're one of the hardest things I think to do in craft brewery because of the scale is to make a consistent and repeated product. And so that's really our goal. You know, in different, there's different business models. Some breweries are more focused on doing experimental beers and stuff. So that's maybe a different business model.
So you know what we'll do? We'll take a short break and we'll come back. We'll re-ask that question and we'll talk a bit more about it. This is Richard Lamb for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello everyone and welcome back. I'm speaking with the owner of Little Brown Jug today, Kevin. This is quite fascinating because, you know, I can't imagine actually starting a microbrewery company and all the hurdles and everything. And I do want to go back and talk maybe a little bit about regulations and all that stuff. But we were talking just before the break about production brewing. I think that was the right term. And you were talking about the distinctions between a different type of brewing. Could you bring that a little bit further for us?
Yeah, I mean, we're setting up our... You've been to our facility, so you kind of see how we've been set up.
I went and visited last night because I was really curious to see what it looked like. Yeah, I had to see. But anyway, go ahead.
So our brew house is, everything's been sized basically to scale up and to grow in that space. And so we have a 2,000 liter brew house, that's the size of our batch. And then we have 4,000 liter fermenter tanks. And then as we grow, we actually have two more tanks coming next week. And as we grow, we've kind of planned out where all of the future tanks will go in the space so that right now we're brewing twice a week. And then by the time we're at full capacity, we'll be brewing potentially like 25 times a week. So we'll be brewing around the clock. So on the production side, we had to design our brew house to be able to do that. And
with growth in mind.
With growth. And so things are like, you know, we have a lot of instruments and gauges on our brew house that allow us to like monitor and measure and therefore like control and repeat the process.
So let me step back and ask a question. You say you brew twice a week. So brewing twice a week. So let's put this in the context for our listeners. Okay. Yeah. So how many bottles of beer is brewing twice a week? Is that the right question? You could change the question. Is there certain better, like how much beer is that is really what I'm asking.
I guess it's like 100. I guess that's about 160, 50 liter kegs. I'm trying to think.
Okay.
About,
okay.
If you think about that.
So 100, how much?
60.
50 liter kegs.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you'd have to figure out from there roughly what the math would be in terms of how that would be. I could just sort of see our listeners going, well, how many bottles is that?
Yeah.
well, you know, what's a case look like and stuff like this. Okay. So you've planned for expansion in your plans. So when you're at full production, so let's just sort of jump ahead and say you put everything in place that you hope to do and you're running 24 hours a day. What would that look like? What does that mean for your business?
To get to that point, it'll be an interesting journey because it'll almost be like to use that space in the way that we have it right now, we'll have to reconfigure it a bit and have some kind of like just-in-time processing coming in with kegs and canning, cans and stuff and taking that out.
Yeah. So there's some logistics involved.
There'll be a few logistical hurdles to get to that point, but
yeah. But have you, but because you're an analytical person, you didn't expect me to ask this question.
No.
Maybe I got to get off it. Have you sort of done the math on what that might look like?
Yeah, it's feasible.
It's
right?
Feasible.
It's
okay.
Feasible.
Okay. That's all I'm going to get from you.
Yeah, no, we knew it's possible. So.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, it looks like you've built out the space for that and everything too. And, you know, there's no doubt that you probably would have some people challenges and everything too in that whole mix. How many people work at your organization right now?
We have about 7 full-time employees.
7 full-time employees.
Yeah.
And how long have you been open? When
not quite 6 months.
So 7 employees, not quite 6 months. That's quite significant to be, you know, already at 7 employees and everything. Eventually, how many employees do you think the company would have if you got to the point of using that space fully?
Yeah, it's a good question. Probably 25.
Okay. No, that's a good answer. I was looking for that because Only because I know that you have a vision of growth, right? And I think it's important to share with people that, you know, we are seven people now. We see, say, 25 people. I mean, I know we're picking a number, right, at our production high level. And that's really the, you know, what we're going to apply to the economy in terms of jobs and creativity and that. So that's a good thing to have. You were talking earlier about your beer. Right. So you got one beer right now called 1919. So my first question on that is going to be, why 1919? Like, what's the significance of that as a name for a beer?
Sure. For us, it has two reasons, really. One is the hop that we use in the beer is called Brewer's Gold. And it was made by crossing a wild Manitoban hop with an English hop in the year 1919. And it was actually one of the first available commercial hops in the entire world brewing industry, and has this great Manitoba connection.
Okay, so there's some history. You're linking back to the history of Manitoba.
Exactly, like, and a lot of the hops that are used in craft beer today are like descendants of this hop.
Oh, really? So yeah. So it has a whole descendant history.
Yes,
that's,
it does.
That is so cool. I know I was joking around with you last night about not being 1920 and the Roaring Twenties, because that would be the first vision that I would have. I will say that I had the opportunity to actually taste 1919 last night, and it's a very nice, smooth, pale ale, and thoroughly enjoyed it. So thank you. Yeah, that was quite nice. Not that I'm encouraging overconsumption of alcohol in any way, just for our listeners. And if you do have a drink, please be smart about it and don't drive. So I'll put that out there. I was joking around with you a little bit earlier about why don't you have a name of a beer for your own name, because I've been purposely avoiding saying your last name because I think it sounds like it could be a name of a beer.
It probably could.
Yeah, okay. So if I have it right, it's Selch. Selch. Did I get it right?
Selch, yeah.
Selch, right? So Selch beer. So why didn't you name the beer after your own last name?
I think for us, there's really like... when you go to pick a name, there's maybe three categories. One is like you can name it after yourself. You could pick like a geographic indicator, like, you know, like two rivers or something like that, right? Something about Winnipeg or Manitoba. Or you can kind of create your own thing. And for me, the Little Brown Jug wasn't really about me. It's about the project and about the city and about our beer. And so we came to Little Brown Jug. It was an old... Civil War era drinking song about about rum and gin and stuff. But it kind of embodies growler culture and craft beer culture today. And I like that all three words are diminutive, like little, brown, and jug. So
okay. It's interesting you would say that, because as my wife and I were driving in our car and we were talking about the name of your company, she goes, "Well, that has something to do with rum."
It has.
Right. Yeah. So, and I didn't know that, right? And it's, oh, okay. So actually from an old song. That's actually pretty cool. I think it's very interesting that you talk in terms of really a branding of something. Because when you talk about self or geographic or your own thing, I mean, those are very, very specific, very, very specific things to consider when looking at an organization or a company. As a microbrewery in a very unique area, I have a few minutes to talk about this, and then we'll sort of go to another segment. But what kind of things is your brewery doing in the community?
Well, we're all about honesty, community, and quality at Little Brown Jug. And on the community element, we're just trying to... we have this fantastic space. It's all open concept to the brewery. And we just want people to use it in innovative ways that connect people to the exchange and those people to our brewery and to the, you know, the process that's going on there. So we've done, the Winnipeg Symphony Orchestra is going to be playing tonight, doing a pop-up concert. We've done yoga with a live band in the brewery. We had a great grand opening, and all of the restaurants in the exchange that carry our beer catered it for us. And we're doing other things like community-supported agriculture boxes. So all summer long, people are able to subscribe to a garden box and pick it up every week from our big cold room at the brewery.
With that in mind, we are coming to the point where we need to take a short break. And when we'll come back, we'll continue talking about the entrepreneurial journey you're on. This is Richard Lannan for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's Richard Lannan. I'm hanging out with the owner of Little Brown Jug. Just before the break, we were talking a little bit about different categories, and I was jokingly saying, you know, why didn't you, you know, name a beer after yourself, Kevin? But then I thought, you know, when you start talking about the idea of an organization, self, the geographic location, or maybe what was the one last one? Geographic location and one thing, or was that?
It's just its own thing.
It's its own thing, right? And then related your company to a song, which I thought was absolutely great. But I couldn't help imagine or think about the hurdles, you know, to get started, the challenges, because every entrepreneur has challenges. And earlier on, you talked a bit about having this idea, having a business plan, and going for investors before you had anything, right? So maybe we'll start there, because that sounds like where most new entrepreneurs start, right? So what was that whole process like? And how did you go about finding investors for your business?
Right. So I guess the first thing is that what I discovered was, if you were an existing business with financial statements, I think there's lots of people that will look at your financial statements, whether they're good or bad or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Because they can see what's going on and
what the reality is.
They can see all this, right? Yeah. So I think the kind of people that are willing to invest in a business that does not exist is a much smaller subset of people. And so, but I was fortunate to get connected to some of these people that really, shared the vision. They had even thought about opening a microbrewery themselves, so it was a good match, and so they really, I guess that they, my investors are Winnipeggers that really believe in the city and believe in what we were trying to do in the exchange, as well as the business model, and just I think my analytical background, I had a pretty detailed business plan that gave a lot of confidence in terms of that some things had been thought out.
I think that's a really important point to make, actually, because I've seen entrepreneurs, even ones that have been in business for a while, and then startups, and looking for people to invest in their organization without that detailed business plan, or they just have a one sheet, or it's in three sheets, or whatever it is, without having the full detail there. And I would agree with you, you know, coming from things from a strategic planning background, it does. If I had read your business plan at the time, I would be more confident in you too, only for the fact that you had the details. And I'm just sharing openly because I sometimes review business plans for people. And so I know roughly, you know, what to look for and everything. So I think that's really good. Where does money come from?
Trees?
Trees. Yeah. We just go chop down the tree and basically go from, we didn't expect that. No. Like really, you went out and got investors. So most entrepreneurs usually, you know, they hit up their family, they hit up private investors, they hit up the banks. Like really, where'd your money come from?
Yeah. I mean, there's investors, there's that love money from family.
Yeah.
And then from the banks as well. And I guess being in government, just kind of knowing how to navigate those kinds of programs as well.
There, you know what, it's interesting you would say that, because there are tons of government programs for entrepreneurs. Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't know about them and don't take advantage of them.
Yeah, for sure. There's lots of things out there through like Canadian Small Business Financing Loans and BDC, and then startup grants, young entrepreneur grants, different things like that. There's a lot of different sources out there. And at the beginning, yeah, you have to look at everything.
Yeah, you got to look at and find that particular information. I appreciate you sharing that, because I think that's so important for entrepreneurs to hear. One of the other things, and this is more of an interest on my side, I couldn't help but think about, okay, you're starting a brewery. What about starting a restaurant or a cafe or whatever it might be? Like I can add this to anything, but there must have been a lot of regulations and things that you had to go through, sort of hoops you got to go through to sort of make sure that you're fitting within certain... I'm going to call it, I hate to use the word regulations again, but I'll say regulations again. Like, what was that whole experience? Like, what
yeah,
was that?
As a brewery, we are highly regulated, right? There's the Liquors and Gaming Authority, Federal Excise, Manitoba Liquors and Lotteries, as well as all like the city regulations around building codes, taking a 100-year-old building, converting it in the way that we have. And then Manitoba Health as well as a food processing plant, basically. So, lots of different hurdles, but I guess this was maybe my strength as a former bureaucrat to be able to go through and like understand what would be looked for and then how to address each point. So, and there's a bit of a learning curve even here, just because There are other microbreweries, of course, but it's still kind of new. And if you're doing something a little bit different, there's sort of just a process of going through and making sure everybody's comfortable with what you're doing.
Okay. And so I think that's a really important point to make, because right away, just as you said, well, having been a bureaucrat, you called yourself that, so I'm going to use
it. It's okay.
I'm sitting here right away going, I want to hire this guy to do some stuff for me because you know the hurdles. And I think sometimes... all the paperwork and the stuff that you need to do to take advantage of some of these programs or to deal with regulations, it's overwhelming. You know, like it's like you wish you just had the money yourself just to go do it, but you've been able to help make your dream happen.
Yeah, like if I didn't have that experience, I think it would be very daunting, some of that.
How, from the time you decided to make to create a microbrewery to the time you opened the door, how long did that take?
About 3 years.
3 years. Wow. At what point in time did you have your business plan done?
Probably about 2 years into it or so.
Yeah. It was a process. This has basically been a long process for you that you sort of chiseled away at and made some solid decisions as to what you wanted to do.
There's a lot of process of discovery, like learning about beer and equipment and how the industry works. And, you know, we talked about the financing as one hurdle, right? But there, along the way, there are so many other hurdles that you have to get over anyway, right? And so if you look at the financing as just that, it's just another hurdle that you have to solve. There's a lot of other hurdles, like the regulatory and other things that you're going to encounter. And so I guess if you believe in your plan, like these are all solvable problems, you just have to figure out how to solve it.
How to solve them. Okay. I think that's a good point. And I want to go back to the point you were just making about the last piece, because I'm a little guilty of this and of thinking, oh, gee, you must have knew something about micro breweries before you got started on this. But you basically just told me that you had to learn about the business before you started the business.
Definitely. It was like years of learning about it, visiting microbreweries, getting involved in the industry for sure.
Okay. I think that's an important point to make, because there might be other entrepreneurs out there who are thinking of making a change and they have something that they like, they enjoy, but it's that daunting learning task that you have to go through to actually start to understand how it all works.
Yeah, I don't know if every industry is as easygoing and welcoming as the microbrewery industry,
but people are great,
right? You just, if you go and meet with somebody, they want to talk to you and help you. Even in Winnipeg here, we're all part of a Manitoba Brewers Association. We meet like monthly and share information, help each other out. It's a really good community.
That's good that you said that, because I wouldn't have known that in terms of the brewery situation stuff. One of the things that that I think is also quite fascinating is is all around the idea that people do share information. Having said that, if someone want to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
We're on all different kinds of social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. But the best way is probably just to send us an email to beer@littlebrownjug.ca.
beer@littlebrownjug.ca. I love it. Great show. I've been thoroughly enjoying myself. So what a show I've been having. Kevin, if there was a final thought you could share with our listeners, what would that be?
I mean, I think your listeners, those thinking about starting businesses here in Winnipeg, there's a great optimism in the city, I think, and a lot of great entrepreneurs doing really interesting things. And I think if they took that leap, they'd find that on the other side.
I think they'd find a whole community. And I'm glad I unearthed you. That's your organization. It's just something I've been talking on the radio about unearthing businesses in Manitoba and celebrating success. My mandate. As Kevin looks at me and wonders what I'm talking about, this is Richard Lamb for Set for Success. You know what? As the listeners, obviously, I want to thank you for tuning in. Kevin, I want to thank you for being here. If you got a question, idea, or a thought you want to share about this show, send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. I'm always looking for new guests, very interesting type, unique businesses. Also, just do remember, though, to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.